The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Thinking sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Insufficient data to formulate a reply.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Thinking Sideways. I'm Steve.
I'm Joe.
Oh, I'm Devin.
Did you forget what we're doing again?
I guess I always forget. Everybody does it differently. Joe's always like, I'm joined as always by blah, 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 blah. And then when I'm doing it, I don't have to think about it at all. So.
Well, you guys shamed me out of doing on my left, on my right, because then you always made fun of me. So I stopped doing that.
Sorry.
But anyway.
Those people don't care.
This is Thinking Sideways, the podcast. And this week, we're going to talk about a story that probably a lot of people haven't heard about, which is the battle over Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
You're talking about the movie, right?
Have you seen that movie?
I have
no,
not.
I've seen the previews.
No.
It looks action-packed. But
well,
sure
anybody
bad.
Who's seen the movie will probably agree with me. As a feature-length film, it was garbage. Mm. It was really bad. But the great thing about that movie is if you've seen it, you actually know about the story that we're going to talk about today. Because in that movie, at the beginning, they put up some fake newspaper clippings or headlines that talk about the Battle of Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
They do. I don't know if this is intentional or accidental, but they sort of got the year and the date wrong. Mm. But they talk about the event.
Yeah. Well, so the event was a precursor, like a scouting mission?
According to the movie, yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where they're going. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why whenever I see anything in the sky and I don't know what it is, I get up my 50 cal and start blazing away at it. Because I know they're a scouting mission.
Obviously.
Well, let's move to the story.
Okay.
All right. If anybody who knows their World War II history will remember that the attack on Pearl Harbor happened on the 7th of December, 1941. Mm-hmm. And immediately after that, the United States jumped into World War II. And the population was all behind it. Everybody was gung-ho. But there were also a lot of fears that the Axis would attack. I believe it was mostly the Japanese people were worried about were going to attack our native soil.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and they actually did. They sent those balloon bombs over.
There were balloon bombs, yeah. And there were a lot of scares. And like the balloon bombs, there were a couple of things that did actually happen.
Yeah, most of them, yeah. didn't cause any damage at all.
Yeah, and actually one of those attacks is the precursor to the Battle of Los Angeles, or over Los Angeles. Depending on where you read, it's said in a number of different ways. But that having been said, on the 23rd of February 1942, a Japanese submarine surfaced outside of Galena, California, which is on the coast, and it fired 15 shells at an oil refinery. Thankfully, their aim is really bad, so they didn't make any serious damage to anything.
So it's a lot like the movies, actually.
Kinda. But they did scare the crap out of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then they you know, descended and disappeared. Nobody knew where they were. The U.S. Naval Intelligence Service put out a warning, and remember, this first attack was on the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
They put out a warning that said that on the 24th, there was likely to be another Japanese attack on the coast of California, presumably in Los Angeles.
So they were like at the red level of the terror alert?
They blacked out. I think they had a citywide blackout, or you were supposed to keep your lights, you know, you draw the curtains, so keep it dark.
Yeah, you drive with hooded headlights and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm so glad that we have better targeting technology these days, so we don't need to black out because it wouldn't do us any good.
Yeah, I know.
We don't need to go through all that BS.
No, we don't have to go through all that.
It must have been a great time for stargazing.
Probably was.
Yeah.
No, what is it? Light pollution, right?
Yeah, no light pollution.
Yeah, no light pollution. That would have been kind of nice.
That would be kind of sweet.
Yeah. Well, this warning goes into effect, and it went into effect at 7:18 p.m.
Okay.
And it was turned off or went out of effect at 10:23 p.m. because nothing had happened. There was nothing going on, so the Naval Intelligence said, well, nope, everything's fine. Sorry about that.
They were like, well, if it was going to happen, it would have happened already.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that they could be running a little late.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
They had a 3-hour window and they didn't arrive, so their reservation is canceled.
3 hours and 5 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the extra 5 minutes that really does it.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of mystifying in and of itself. It's like, you know, really?
Yeah.
If they're out there, they can pretty much pop up and shoot at us anytime they feel like
it. Yeah. Usually that's kind of what happens. Well, sometime after midnight, so now we're at the 25th of February, unidentified objects or a object, we're not really sure which, was picked up about 100 miles off of the California coast. As a side note, when I was doing the reading, I couldn't figure out how they knew that this thing was 100 or 120 miles out, because radar technology at that time had a range of 22 miles.
Yeah. Could it have been like a warship?
It could be. There is such a thing as radar picket ships. And so,
oh, were there?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there are. So it could have been a warship.
I presumed that it was ground-based radar. That's why I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. But that would explain it.
If they were expecting something from Japan, they likely would have had a lot of...
Obviously, yeah, the more notice, the better. So having a line of ships out there offshore probably would be a good idea.
Okay. So that explains that piece. So it's about 100, 120 miles out. They pick up an object or objects, the reports are unclear. At 2:20 a.m., the city of Los Angeles was pushed into another blackout because these objects, or single object again, I don't know which it is, had made their way to the coast, and they figured that it was over the city or approaching the city, so let's black it out so they don't know where the city's at so they can't bomb the city.
Okay.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
That logic is super sound, but okay.
Well, if you think about the technology of that day and age, it's not that advanced, so I'm going to bomb a target that I can see
at
night.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair.
If it's not lit up, I don't know exactly where it is, so
I don't know where it is.
They'll still drop their bombs, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Got to hit something.
Well, this is pretty obvious to everybody now, but the residents of Los Angeles are freaking out.
Oh, sure.
Because the city has just been forced into a blackout.
Did they just, like, cut the generators?
They just cut the power.
Wow.
Yeah, there's reports of people who were at diners or at places, and all of a sudden, boom, power's gone. They just shut it off.
I know the sound effect that goes along with that.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, it's the doo.
Oh, yeah, it would be. And the light.
Exactly.
That's it.
Was like that. What's that? That sound when you lose Pac-Man?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Wow, we're really off topic.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. So, like I said, the people are freaking out. There were reports that varied, and I mean varied all over the map, from 25 planes at 12,000 feet into the air to a balloon with a flare on it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, people are kind of there. Everybody's calling in saying, I saw this, I saw that. They're just hysteria, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Which, when you think about it, is kind of silly, because Los Angeles is a big place.
Mm-hmm.
And 25 planes, even if they've got bombs on them, the chances of one of those bombs hitting you is about the same chances as you winning the lottery. I don't think you have much to worry about.
I think that people who live in Los Angeles have higher expectations of winning the lottery.
Ah, that's a good point.
Possibly.
And they probably think that those planes are coming in precisely for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, hey, I live in Los Angeles. It's beautiful.
No offense to our L.A. listeners.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that reminds me of a joke, but I'll tell you guys later.
Yeah, tell us that later. At 3:30 a.m. on the 25th of February, something is detected, and the anti-aircraft installations that were spread around the city start going off.
What are those?
That is 50 caliber guns that
just
are
like hidden.
They were installations.
Oh.
Because the war effort, they were prepared for a coastal attack. So they had, I believe it was 6 different locations around the Los Angeles area. They had these 50 caliber guns, and these guns are shooting 12.8 pound rounds. That's what they shoot into the air.
I think that I don't think there are 50 cals. I mean, because the projectile on a 50 cal is weighs a lot less than that. But a lot of anti-aircraft guns are like kind of like cannons, and they shoot these shells that explode in midair.
Right.
They're not just bullets.
They're not bullets. They're frag.
Yeah, they're frag.
Fragmenting rounds is what that is. And my dad was in the bomb squad when I was a kid, and so it took me a while as I was reading about this, and people may not understand this, but how an anti-aircraft gun works, especially in those days, is it's not a guided rocket.
Oh, it's just like a grenade.
It's a grenade that you pump into the air, and it gets a certain set height, and then it explodes based on its fuse, and it just fragments and just throws all this shrapnel around.
Oh, just on the hope that it'll like tear up as much as it possibly can.
Whatever's in its range of fire,
like a shotgun,
is gonna get blasted. If you've ever watched those old World War II movies, and there's things going off, and there's all this rending metal in the plane of what whoever's flying, that's what it is, it's all this fragment material.
Yeah. I'm learning.
And by the way, of course, there's always the inevitability of gravity. So
which pulls it back down.
All those metal fragments you're putting into the air, dudes.
Yeah, they come back
down. Back down to Earth. Yeah.
You know, a funny aside story is, like I said, my dad was in the military, and he dealt with the bomb squad.
Uh-huh.
I remember when I was a teenager, he was on some exercise, and they were using fragmenting rounds. He actually got one stuck in his finger.
What?
Yeah, a round went off, and it was a stray piece, and hit his hand, and hit his trigger finger, and he had to go to the hospital and have it pulled out. This day, he's got a pretty hefty scar on that finger.
Did he get a Purple Heart, I hope?
No. No, because it was a training exercise.
Oh.
But we did call him Frag Finger for a while. That was just kind of a family joke. But anyway, so they're shooting these rounds into the air. The shooting happens for half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Just like blindly? Were they just like,
there's searchlights going on. They're trying to focus. They're trying to find whatever enemy craft is in the air, and they're going after it. During this half hour, they shot 1,440 rounds into the air.
What?
That must have been fun.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of rounds.
It was, according to accounts I've read, it was like watching a fireworks show.
Yeah,
just constant bang, 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 just explosions all over
in the air.
Well,
there's a video, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of see
old film,
that.
Yeah.
It's just like old film, and you're like looking, and you're just like, it just looks like explosion, explosion, explosion. You can't hardly see anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we're going to talk about this with like theories and stuff, but it's just like explosions, explosions.
Yeah.
Everything is just happening all over the place.
The sad thing is that like, you really don't want to be outside watching it, because all that metal is going to rain down.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your neck craned back,
hey,
and you're looking out there.
Well, and that is one of the things. There was a lot of property damage from all those fragments coming back down to Earth. There's pictures of houses with holes in them, cars with holes in them, duds that came down and punched through driveways and streets and stuff. It was a lot of damage.
Several people were killed just from metal fragments coming down, too.
No, actually, people didn't die from fragments. The deaths that were reported, from what I can piece together in the less sensationalized versions, is there was at least one, if not two, heart attacks from all of the commotion and a couple of deaths in traffic accidents. Because what's going on? You're seeing all this stuff and you're looking up as you're driving and you're not paying attention to where you're going and you hit something.
Yeah, and as far as the heart attacks goes, those people were probably going to have heart attacks anyway.
Sooner or later.
People have heart attacks, you know, so it's probably, probably not even related.
Yeah. Well, during the time, this half hour that we're putting all this ordnance into the air, more crazy accounts are happening.
Okay.
So the accounting from when the firing stopped to when it finished.
Start to finish. Yeah.
Completely unreliable.
Okay.
Because there were reports that there was a craft in the air that was moving between quote unquote very slow to 200 miles an hour.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There were multiples. At least four enemy craft were shot down, and one of them crashed onto one of the major roads in Los Angeles.
Seems legit.
But the wreckage mysteriously disappeared.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing was found. No. Nothing was found on the ground in terms of enemy craft. So there's a big issue. But the other thing is that after they had done all this firing, so the searchlights are going on, they were pumping all these rounds in the air, we're trying to find an enemy and just hose them with it and cut them down. They stop the firing, and then 40 P-38 fighters are launched from one of the local military installations to go into the air, find these enemy craft, and track them down. And then find anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else was up there.
Yeah.
No other enemy craft. Like I said, there was nothing that was on the ground. No dead, no wreckage, nothing. Yeah.
I'm just going to do a little aside here. There's a episode of Futurama where there's killbots. And you know the killbots, right?
I think they're just
machine guns that are robots.
Yes.
It, right?
What a great idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
And there's so many joke scenes about this, right? Where like somebody will be like, oh, I don't know, it seems like there was a fire. And they'd be like, fire? And they'd start to fire and be like, did somebody say fire? What's going on, guys? And it'd just be like just like chaos. And I a little bit feel like that happened. Like somebody was like, oh, there's something in the sky, fire. Everyone was like, fire, we're going to fire. We're going to just.
Exactly.
Shooting.
The first battery opens up, and then all the other batteries go, oh, there's something going on,
I guess.
Somebody
got a little trigger happy, and then everybody was like, oh, we better join in.
Yeah.
That's a little bit what it sounds like. That's exactly it.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to tread on the theories. No, because that's kind of the way I was thinking of it. It's the old movie trope of one guy fires and suddenly all the
everybody's
machine guns
firing.
Just going. It's like, we don't know what we're firing at. We were just shooting.
Yep.
He started it.
And then the thing about it is flak rounds, when they go off, they actually leave a trace of smoke behind.
Mm-hmm.
They make smoke. So I'm sure the air was pretty smoky up there.
Exactly. And then
searchlights are moving across all that layer of smoke.
And we're going to talk about some of that when we get into the theories, but there is a lot of smoke in the air because of all this 1,400 plus rounds that are up there exploding. You know, it just turned into a murky mess.
Yeah, it's Los Angeles. It already was a murky mess.
Not in the 40s. Not by then. Probably not as bad.
So
did the military say anything about this?
Oh, yeah. They put out some reports.
Okay.
The next day, one military official said that the entire thing happened due to a false alarm.
Fire!
Exactly. There was another guy who swore that he had seen an aircraft, and it was most certainly some kind of craft in the air. Now, remember, at this point, the term UFO isn't in circulation, so they weren't saying it was a UFO, but he said, I definitely saw something in the air. He was shortly thereafter mothballed. Mothballed means he was retired.
Yeah, I think the word you're thinking of is like cashiered.
That's another one. They basically put him out to farm.
Yeah. Mothballed is when you like take something and you put it in storage for the possibility of future usage.
Oh, that's
It was cashiered.
What does cashiered mean? Same thing.
Yeah,
it means he was canned.
He was canned. He was done. They put him on pension. Thank you very much for your service.
Did they actually put him on pension? Because like he could have just kept talking.
No, he was. As I understand, the guy had been in for like 20 years.
Yeah, he was a high ranking official. Okay. He was very decorated. Yeah. It wasn't like some private.
Okay.
Who just thank you, private. You're done. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was an official War Department statement. And I love the official War Department statement, by the way.
And I really like the fact that it was called the War Department.
Yeah.
Now they're called Department of Defense. I like war better.
Yeah, it's just got a better ring to it.
A little more honest.
Yeah. So the War Department said, and I quote, "Either they were commercial planes operated by an enemy from secret fields in California or Mexico, or they were light planes launched from Japanese submarines. In either case, the enemy's purpose must have been to locate anti-aircraft defenses in the area or to deliver a blow at civilian morale."
Mission succeeded. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely going to locate the anti-aircraft batteries in the area.
Oh, yeah.
By sacrificing yourself, of course.
Yeah, mm-hmm. By going kamikaze.
Yeah, of course, there's no reason to do that because, I mean, as we all know from the descriptions of the Venona. Have you heard of Venona?
It sounds sort of familiar, but it's not ringing a bell.
Well, Venona was this big project, basically. So we intercepted and decrypted all of the communications between Japan and basically all of their allies and their spies in the U.S., et cetera. Okay. So essentially, we were aware of the fact that there were Japanese spies in America.
Mm-hmm.
So we were well aware of this. That's why the Japanese were in turn. Which, by the way, let me state, it was not fair. Because
it was a really bad move on our part.
Yeah. You know, 99% of them, I'm sure, were not spies. But there were a good number of spies in that community.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that all came out, you know, decades afterwards when they finally declassified this stuff. So when you've got all these spies on the ground, there's really no need to sacrifice planes and pilots to try to find out where the anti-aircraft batteries are.
It's a little extreme.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a hard way to go about
it. Tough to get somebody to volunteer for that task.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, the thing about it is you send a couple of planes in there and they get shot down and killed. How's he going to, like, report back the positions to the enemy?
Well, that's what the spies are for, right? Yeah. Like, the spies can't figure it out because they're just, like, hidden in, like, towers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then
sitting on the top of ridges, obviously, with a big gun on it.
Yeah.
No, it was hidden. It had a ribbon on it, probably, like a tree, maybe, like, around it. So they couldn't tell where it was, so they were like, all right, send a couple jets in. Planes in.
Yeah.
And the things will go off, and we'll be like, okay, we can mark them on the map, and then we'll send the map back to you guys, and then we'll know where they are. Which I don't know why that would be helpful.
Yeah.
To just know where they are. But sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the other purpose, of course, is if you plan a massive air raid on Los Angeles, don't you have better things to do with your military assets? Destroying military assets rather than just bombing a civilian city.
Yeah. I mean, the whole statement by the War Department was a little weird to me, and I kind of equate it to saving face. I think that they didn't want to admit that they had screwed up.
That somebody yelled fire.
Yeah.
Well, although, for the guys way up higher, it's not that embarrassing because there's just some yokels down there manning the anti-aircraft batteries.
Yeah.
You know? So you just say, yeah, sorry. Well,
sorry about that.
Somebody got a little trigger happy.
Sorry. Well, that's the story. So now let's get into some theories about what happened.
Okay.
And right off the bat, the easiest theory is, well, duh, it was a UFO.
Of course.
UFOs.
Of course, a UFO, yeah.
Well, okay, let's be honest here, right? Let's be very honest. Technically, it was an unidentified flying object.
Absolutely.
Technically, there could have been an unidentified flying object. You are correct.
You mean that class of UFO that we call flying saucers.
Well, That is one of them. And actually, there's multiple UFO theories on this one. I think I kind of stole your thunder today, Devin, because I know you love the UFO-style stories. And this, I believe, has three, if not four, UFO components
to it. I can't believe you stole this story from me, then.
Mm. Yeah, you can.
Nah.
Because we talked about it.
You're right. Fine. Selling me out.
Yep. Okay. Theory number one. It was a friendly flying saucer that just happened to have super awesome shields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What?
Okay, here's the theory. You remember we were talking about the news footage earlier? and the floodlights that were in the air. Well, there's also a very iconic photo that was run in the LA Times that is multiple searchlights all shining on one location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that photo, we're going to talk about that, but that photo is what a lot of UFO enthusiasts are drawn to in this story.
You mean ufologists?
Those people, too.
UFO experts.
And what they do is everybody says, well, obviously they were focusing on something and it must have been a UFO. They say that, you know, it must have had fantastic shields, and so it didn't get hurt by
so
all
it made
of the flak.
Unscathed.
And it was able to, you know, go into warp drive and get out of there.
Right, and they had to be benevolent because they didn't shoot back, so they must have been friendly.
Absolutely. Either that or we really ticked them off, and they're heading back to the mothership, and they're coming back as we speak.
They're like, oh, this is going to be quick, which is 100 years for them. But it's just a short hop. Here's how our friends prove their theory.
Let's refer to them as ufologists.
I can't say that word, which is why I wasn't doing it.
I'm sorry.
I'm not good with my word. This is how they prove that there had to have been something in those spotlights. They put it in Photoshop, and they adjust the holy crap out of it until a shape appears at the apex of all of those searchlights.
Flying saucer shape.
I just did that at work today.
Did you?
Well, yeah.
Did you do that with that Los Angeles Times
photo? No, I did it with a picture of some people, and they suddenly turned really, really pale and unhappy looking.
Yeah, Photoshop is fun.
Yeah, it's fun, but here's my problem.
Well, yeah.
That original photo was retouched.
What?
Yeah.
When they took that photo to make it proper for print and stand out from the page, they had to doctor the negative. They used white paint on the negative to really, really make sharp contrast. Mm-hmm. So that is not a reliable image.
Which is sad, too, because, you know, the original negative has been pretty much just defaced. So
it has, but there was actually somebody found a copy of it in 2011.
Was it a copy of it, or was it just like a frame or two away?
It was an original. It was a copy of the original negative before they did the photo retouching.
Mm. Okay.
So it didn't have paint and all that other crud on it. Mm. And they did the same thing. They scanned the negative. They did all the analysis. And they didn't find as much of a distinct object in there, which I personally believe that distinct object was probably the paint. But they didn't find nearly as much there. Mm-hmm. But they still say, well, we found something because we knew what we were looking for.
Uh-huh. I looked at these pictures online, and I think I would agree that it vaguely looks like there's something there. But in my opinion, what it looks like is there is like 12 different spotlights all coming together to form a bright spot on a
cloud of smoke or just a cloud
or just whatever. Yeah. You know, it doesn't look like there's anything solid or like of any kind of substance.
Well,
there.
You know, and the thing about it is too is that even if you had the original negative, it was very dark out, and so that one spot where they all came together was so bright, considering the settings that the camera was on and everything, it was so overexposed, that part of the photo is completely blown out.
And you know what the best part is?
Yeah.
It's obvious that it's an extended shot.
Well, of course it is.
It had to be an extended shot. It's a delayed exposure.
Yeah.
And for anybody that looks at this image, there's a real easy way to figure it out. Don't look at the bright spot where all the spotlights are coming together, but instead look at all the little explosions, which are those anti-aircraft rounds going off. There's, I don't know, a dozen or so of them all exploding at once.
Which ones are you talking about?
There's the convergence point where the spotlights are at.
Yeah.
And then as you look in that dark sky area, you will see all these bright winks.
Those little dots, you mean?
Yeah.
I think those are lens flares. I don't think those are explosions.
No, it's it had to have been a delayed exposure, and there was only, like I said, 4 to 6 locations that were shooting rounds off. Mm. Well, they can only shoot so fast, and yeah. everything couldn't have been exploding all at once. So it had to be a several second, if not a minute long exposure.
Mm. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the upshot of it is, though, is that that center spot where the saucer supposedly was mm-hmm. is completely blown out.
Oh, yeah. No,
so,
no.
I don't care how sophisticated your computer software is, you can't restore information that's been destroyed.
Right.
It's gone.
No, and I do not disagree with you at all.
Well, so. And it, you know, it's gone in a really interesting way,
mm-hmm.
but it's gone.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
It's no longer there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
So that is the first ufologist's theory. Did okay. I say that word right?
I think it's actually pronounced ufologist.
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 You guys cut
I'm
it out.
Sorry.
Okay. Next UFO theory is that it was a horde of little alien ships.
Oh, yeah.
So here's what they say is that, well, actually, we talked about this. The footage?
Yeah,
remember
I watched it.
The video footage? Joe, I don't know if you ever
I did not get a chance to look at that.
Okay. Well, before we get into the footage, I know I told Devin this, but I really, really love listening to the narration because it was old news film.
Yeah.
And it was... In the county of Los Angeles. Los Angeles. Los Angeles. It's just really funny to hear it pronounced that way rather than Los Angeles, as we all say it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's that means? Nothing to the story. I just found it funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, they did get some film footage of the explosions, and people point out that they can make out shapes in the lower corner, I think it's the lower left-hand frame of the corner near the spotlights, and then these shapes take off to the left.
They don't really, though. I mean, okay, so, and I know I'm a little jumping on your toes right
now. Nope, have at it.
But it just, okay, so there are two really great, super plausible explanations for this, both of which are way better than it's something that's like taking off, right? Like, okay, you can see things exploding around this like space. So, okay, maybe there is a little shadow that passes through the light. Maybe that actually happened. But it, like, it's just as plausible that it's just a bunch of little shrapnel pieces
mm-hmm.
as yeah. it is that they're like little ships.
Mm-hmm.
They don't move in any way that stands out as like, oh, wow, that thing moves like a ship, like it's being controlled by an intelligent being. Mm-hmm. It moves like gravity is pulling something through. Also, it's really old film. It's degraded. They got spots on it all the time, particularly if you're shooting a film in this kind of like weird shadowy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, yeah, I mean,
and it's black yeah. and white. Remember, everybody, we're talking black and white footage.
And it's being shot in like there's just shrapnel going off everywhere. It's not ideal conditions.
No, it's middle of the night.
You know, it's actual film. Things happen to it. And you can see, like, earlier in other places, in less interesting, maybe, places, that there are definitely spots on the film.
Mm-hmm.
So to say, oh, no, it's definitely not a spot, like, it just, well, because it wasn't convenient for it to be, it was convenient for it to be a spot over there, but it's not convenient here. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and the other thing about the footage that I saw is, like I said, some people, everybody's analyzed the holy heck out of this. And somebody took several frames of it and made stills and would point out a dot.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I have issue with the fact that sometimes they were dots and sometimes they were cigar-shaped
yeah.
objects, but I'm going to set that on the table. Is there's one place that I saw where they say, here it is in frame one. And then the frame two that they've shown, it's now shifted to the left. And then in frame three, it's gone up and to the left. Okay, well, here's the problem. It's some guy out in the dark with a wooden tripod with a giant heavy film camera trying to pan around, which means that thing is shaking like mad from all the concussions. So, of course, the camera is going to vibrate and jerk around, and whatever it's looking at and recording is going to, quote unquote, appear to move because the camera has actually shifted.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the thing that really speaks to that theory is that they zoom really in on this one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were going frame by frame on all the film, you would see everything kind of jumping around.
Yeah.
I feel
yes.
that's probably a fairly accurate assessment. That
and if you watch the footage, you can tell that things are really shaky.
Yeah.
It's really shaky footage. Could've they didn't been, have steady cams.
Might have even been handheld, you think?
No way. Yeah. No.
Maybe it could have been on the shoulder.
It might have been a shoulder camera, but I don't know. Those cameras were pretty big and
yeah,
bulky
at
that
Yeah, but in
point.
I guess, you know, like in extreme circumstances. Like
oh, yeah,
that,
in extreme circumstances,
people
will do it.
Like, well...
Well, that's the horde of little ships. Let's move on to the next, which is, and I love this name, it is a variation for Pleiadian beam ship.
Oh, a yeah. Pleiadian beam
that's my,
ship.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yes, yeah. Yeah, Pleiadian.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys.
I'm on it.
Okay. Here's how this goes. And I apologize if I sound like I'm dismissive of this theory.
But you are, so.
I'm not trying to be. But where this one comes from, I really, really call it shaky footage. So
yeah.
There's a person, like I said, everybody's been doing this photo analysis. And the one thing that the person who put this together is I really appreciated that they took the images from that night and they superimposed them onto current photographs of Los Angeles. So you can kind of get a perspective yeah. of where it was.
Yeah.
I saw
that.
Those
was
pictures.
Really
those
helpful.
Cool.
And that was
kind of cool.
Yeah, it was really, and you know, they made them as gifts, so it kind of, the photo, the black and white would kind of fade in and out, so you get a perspective of where it was. But what they did, this person did in this particular article that I found, is they said, well, you know, there's this other guy who's got all these UFO photos, and they took one of these supposed UFO photos that is from a guy named Billy Meyer. And they took Billy Meyer's photo, and that's where the name variation for Pleiadian beam ship came from. Is he says that's what it is?
How does he know that?
He made it up
because he talks to aliens.
Because he made it up. I know
he talks to aliens. But no, they superimposed it, and when they did their adjustments to the original, the shape matches according to them. Okay, well, my issue with this is I'm not going to go into Billy Meyer's a whole lot. Actually, I've got about two sentences on Billy Meyer's because that's as far as I want to go. But this guy, since the 70s, has been publishing photos of alien craft. He's been publishing audio recordings of alien crafts. He's been reporting abductions, and he's been reporting contacts and conversations with alien species. He's been doing this for 50 years, and none of his stuff is even close to being substantiated. And I looked at some of his supposed photos, and they kind of look like the old hubcap on a string.
Yeah.
It's people like you that are put here by the aliens.
I know, exactly.
To keep people who are actually experiencing
abductions. Does not compute. I mean, no, I'm not.
Should we kill him?
Yeah, yeah. We probably should.
No!
Let me get the 9mm.
I'm just a lizard person.
Yeah.
I'm a real human being.
But I've got to say that his flying saucer, which I've seen pictures of, is kind of cheesy looking. It's very 50s.
It's very 50s, and it also looks exactly the same in every picture.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that there's something to be said for, like, too much of the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Maybe, yeah, show it from different angles, dude. Huh?
Yeah, like, give us a different angle or something. Like, give it to us, like, lower or higher. You know, it's just like it looks the exact same in every single
one. Yeah, it's very
one.
Convenient.
Yeah, I agree.
I have to say, and I don't want to blow my own horn, but I haven't ever faked a UFO photo, but I'm sure I could come up with a much better one. I know I could.
Yeah.
And, in fact, as soon as we're done recording, let's fake a UFO photo.
Let's not.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Well, we're done with UFOs.
So
we're done with beam ships?
Yeah, we're done with the beam ship.
But the Pleiadians
are upset that we didn't give them more airtime. I know.
Is it Pleiadians or Pleiadians?
You know, I just went through the how to say UFOologist.
And now UFOologist.
You're UFOologist. You two are killing me.
Get it right, you racist.
Okay. Well, our next theory
serious again.
Is actually one that everybody has heard, which is that it was a weather balloon.
Okay. So I talked to my mom about these stories every once in a while. No, listen. She just wants to know. She's just very interested. And she said, you know, what are you guys recording tonight? And I was kind of telling her. And she said, oh, I bet it was a weather balloon. It's always a weather balloon.
It's always a weather balloon.
It always is.
But, like, she said that. So
it's a total trope.
Yeah.
It absolutely is a total trope. It's that or swamp gas.
Yeah.
There are two things that were always, oh, well, that's what it was. That weird thing that you saw was swamp gas or a weather balloon.
The weird thing is like, it's always a weather balloon. So you get the impression that weather balloons are being released, like, you know, by the hundreds every hour.
Well, they are.
But have either one of you ever seen somebody releasing a weather balloon?
I have not.
No.
Neither
have I. We have better technology than that now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they still use weather balloons.
Well, but they're not as much.
Yeah.
But they do use
them. Yeah, they're still in use.
But let's get into this. So they were actually in use on a regular basis at that time.
Yeah.
Here's how a weather balloon works, just so we get the basis of it down, is it's a 6-foot round balloon. It's got a piece of recording equipment on it, because usually it was for meteorological stuff, so weather and all of that.
Yeah.
That's why they call them weather balloons.
Exactly. Yeah. And what happens is they let the balloon go, and it's got some kind of gas, helium or hydrogen, whatever it might be in it. It rises, and when it hits a certain altitude, the change in pressure is so great that the balloon, as it's rising, will begin to expand. It'll hit a certain altitude, and it hit its peak altitude, and the balloon will have expanded 5 to 6 times its original size, at which point it breaks.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then all of the equipment that's on it would fall to Earth.
It would get shattered.
But then they would track it down, or it would have a tag on it, please turn into, and, you know, X and X division, please call these people. They would come collect it, and they would take up whatever data it had recorded.
Yeah.
That's how a weather balloon works. Really basic.
Mm-hmm.
But they were being used all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember when I was talking about the reports that were coming in? One of the reports was there was an object that was moving, quote unquote, very slow.
Yeah, I guess a balloon would be pretty slow, huh?
A balloon can only go as fast as the wind currents.
And from what I understand, the anti-aircraft positions themselves were releasing balloons just to get an idea of wind conditions, correct?
Every 6 hours.
Oh, yeah. Fire!
They were releasing balloons every 6 hours. And as a matter of fact, shortly before the firing took place, the 203rd Coast Artillery Regiment had let one go.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
So they let it go, and then they said, oh, what the hell is that? Oh, my God!
Actually, I think they were one of the regiments that might not have fired. Mm. There was one regiment that didn't shoot any rounds during this, and I think it was them.
Because why weren't they frantically on the horn like, stop, you guys, stop!
I think they were, because their CO was like, dude, no.
No.
Like, calling everybody else, and they can't hear the phone ringing.
It's like on silent in their pocket.
Exactly.
You know.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
but okay, so I guess my question would be then, right, like, it's a balloon, right? So it's like, you hit it once with shrapnel and it's done.
Not necessarily.
Really?
Yeah.
So this was, when I was doing the reading on this, I actually had to go out and do a little research on weather balloons, because I thought the same thing. It's like a party balloon. You hit it with something and it's gone.
It pops, yeah.
But that isn't the case. They're actually pretty thick, because think about it, it expands 5 to 6 times its width.
Uh-huh.
And here's how it goes, is that things that are in the air, so this, they refer to it as rigid and semi-rigid craft. So you could think of
like a
balloons
blimp
as semi-rigid, and like the old Zeppelins, that would be a rigid craft.
Okay.
That are using air pressure of some kind of, or gas pressure to rise. They don't need to hold their shape 100% to float.
No.
And when things collide into them, they dent and it bounces off, or maybe they get a small puncture, but they may not just pop all the way right
slowly
there.
Slowly sink. And the thing about it is, too, this is Los Angeles, so if it flops to the ground deflated, well, it's Los Angeles. There's lots of litter. And it's so everybody's going to think, wow, this is just some trash.
Yeah.
And it probably got swept up the next day if it landed within city limits.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And
if not, there were weather balloons coming down all the time, right?
Yeah,
because they
exactly.
were releasing them every 6 hours.
Oh, and by the way, to our LA listeners, I'm just kidding. I know that Los Angeles is no trashier than most American cities. Just joking. But
no, that's the thing is that
it would just look like garbage.
Yeah, and yeah. if it gets a puncture. Let's say that one of these anti-aircraft rounds goes off near it. It's not going to explode. It's going to get a couple of punctures, and then it's going to do what balloons in your house do, your party balloons. They go, and they slowly go down when they get the little puncture in them.
That
instead
was a good
of a
sound effect.
It was. Yeah. I worked on that for hours before
the
show.
Thank God that we got that on tape, too. Yeah. We can use that again and again and again.
Wait, we use tape? But yeah, no. So it's very plausible that it was a weather balloon. The thing is, and this and the next theory, I have issues with saying it was a weather balloon because that doesn't say or that doesn't explain what was picked up off the coast. Mm. Remember all that 120 miles?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Well, it could be that these guys released it and it roared out, zipped out to 100 miles off the coast, and then slowly came back in. Or more likely, it could be coincidental.
It could have been something else.
It could be. And radar is not 100% effective. I mean, you can pick up ghosts on radar. Mm-hmm.
And it was like an hour later, right? They saw something out there, and then like an hour later.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which
that's even from that time, that's a really slow-moving plane.
Yeah.
It's very well, and, you know, you talked about the, what was the bomb balloons? What was the one you were talking about?
Yeah, the Japanese made these balloons and launched them, and the idea was to cause, mayhem in the U.S. and everything like that. And I forget what they called them.
And I can't think. I know the name, and I can't think of what they're called.
Yeah, but I know one of them actually landed in southern Oregon and killed some people.
Mm-hmm. It did. It was a picnicking. A family that was having a picnic.
Yeah.
And it came down and...
These things were, they would go up and they would go to a certain level and they would come back down and from just losing gas.
Mm-hmm. They had a pressure valve, basically.
They had an altimeter on them. At a certain point, they would drop a sandbag to make them go back up again.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came back down again, they'd drop another one. And they keep doing that. And then eventually... at a certain point, when they're out of sandbags, they start dropping incendiaries, and then the last thing is a big bomb, an anti-personnel bomb.
Yeah.
And so the incendiaries were supposed to start house fires, forest fires, whatever, and then the big bomb was just going to land on the ground, and somebody will find it, and it'll blow their arms off or kill them or whatever.
War is a messy business.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they weren't that effective, but we managed to keep it a complete secret. So none of these incidents were publicized, and so it worked for us because Japanese eventually stopped doing it because they weren't hearing anything about it. So they assumed none of them were actually getting here or doing anything. And so they figured it was a waste of time, so they stopped doing it.
That was good on our part.
I know, smart
good
move.
Job, Secret Service.
Yeah, good job, you guys.
Well, let's move into the next theory.
You were trying to talk about.
I was. But and again, I'm going to preface this with the same thing that I finished the last one on, which is this does not explain what we picked up on radar.
Mm-hmm.
But the next theory is that what they saw was clouds.
Well.
Yeah, could have been.
Maybe.
It's actually very plausible if you think about it, because if there is clouds and there's a lot of smoke from all of these, this ordnance going off in the air
and lights,
and you're trying to focus on it, and the clouds are shifting around and the smoke is drifting, it's going to look like there's some kind of shape moving in there.
I don't know if you've ever seen a spotlight shining on clouds. I'm sure you have, like on just low deck light. It looks like a flying saucer zipping around.
That's exactly right. If you see, I always see car dealerships doing it or sports events where they have the big swooping spotlights, and if it's cloudy out, you can just see this roving disc in the sky.
It's kind of fun. I like it.
Yeah,
and I always shoot at those.
But if you also look at the photos, again, that one iconic photo, you can see that the beams of light all kind of hit, and then there's a little bit of diffused light coming off of the opposite end of where each beam should be.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of it, but that would indicate that it was hitting some kind of cloud, and some of it was leaking through the edges, but that was it.
Or that it was reflecting off of a metallic object.
Or that it was reflecting, and
it actually, could have been reflecting off their shields, too.
It could have been. Actually, you know what's funny? If you bring that up. I wasn't going to talk about this, but we're going to go back to your UFO friends. No, I'm not saying that word. There is one person who I've got to give him props for taking and tracking the vectors of each of those lights.
Yeah
I saw that.
And they have one. There's one particular light that should be in a straight line, and then it seems to jog off about 20 degrees after it hits that center mass.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Although, let's be fair, clouds can do that.
They can.
Well, yeah, and it's
water.
That's an interesting observation on his part, but at the same time, also you got to remember that this negative has been so intensely, what's the word I'm thinking about, debased. God knows.
It's overanalyzed.
What I mean is like the original negative was so intensely touched up that, I mean, who knows? Maybe somebody decided to add an extra little streak in there. I mean, it's
well,
entirely possible.
And if he's looking at the unaltered version, which I think that this person was, because I remember seeing the side-by-sides of the original and the unaltered, it looks a little weird, but I don't know that it means that it's reflecting. If that was going to happen to one beam, you think it would happen to all of them. But their light bending shields might have saved the day.
Yeah. Anyway,
what do I know?
No, you don't know anything.
I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Last theory, which is, kind of relates to what Joe and I were talking about the balloon bombs, is the official War Department statement. If you remember, the official War Department statement said they were commercial planes operated by an enemy from secret fields in California or Mexico, or were light planes launched from Japanese submarines. Okay, Japanese submarines were able to and had been known to launch small light aircraft. Not to the level of like the Surcouf that we talked about, but these are very small light, but it's possible.
It's a similar thing, though. The whole idea is to put them up to go around looking for targets,
right,
to reconnaissance.
But it is possible.
It is possible, but
I think we kind of already ran that into the ground is, well, what did they get out of it?
Nothing.
Yeah. What did they get out of it they couldn't get out of their spies on the ground?
And where are they? We pumped a crap ton of ordnance into the air, and there's all these fragments going around. You think we would have got something.
Yeah, probably.
And we got nothing.
Yeah.
So I think that was just kind of a save face, but I looked at it, I was like, I guess it is plausible that it could have been some sort of enemy craft.
Vaguely, yeah.
But we never heard any mention of enemy airfields in use on the continent or in the continental United States or in Mexico. We never heard of any of that. So it doesn't seem to have a lot of basis or a lot of footing.
Yeah,
Little shaky to me.
I agree with that. Yeah,
pretty much. And again, they would have found some wreckage. So I think that we can rule that out.
Yeah.
It could have been just like some people out just flying around, no Japanese at all. Of course, we would have found their wreckage too. So
again, that therein lies the rub is, where are they? And why didn't they say, hi, U.S. military, you tried to shoot me out of the air, stupid. I mean, you would think that somebody would have said something. I mean, maybe they were too embarrassed when they realized the hubbub that they created by taking their unauthorized nighttime flight. But
They were embarrassed,
It was Amelia Earhart.
All right, I'm going to solve this mystery.
Well, we are out of theories, so please.
Yeah, okay.
What is your solution, Mr. Joe?
All right, so there were 6 anti-aircraft batteries around the town, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and five of the 6 opened fire and wasted 1,440 rounds.
Right.
Right. Those rounds were manufactured by Acme Corporation.
Okay.
Acme Corporation bribed the gunners of 5 of those stations to waste 1,400 plus rounds so that they could make some money. So it was Acme.
It's always Acme.
It's always Acme.
Freaking
so,
Acme.
Darn Roadrunner.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Man.
No, that actually would be kind of a sweet deal, I mean, if you could bribe people to just waste lots of rounds so the government has to keep coming back and buy more from you.
It would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, personally, as much as it sounds like I'm following the company line, I really after doing the research, I think it was the weather balloons.
I agree.
Because they're
the
only things that could have sustained the amount of fire and stayed in the air for a bit of time before coming down. And then nobody would have thought twice when they saw them on the ground.
Well, I'll give that one a close second. I'm going to go with Acme Company Perfidy.
Okay.
Yeah. Right,
Devin?
Well, so you put me in a hard spot because most of me wants to say
Pleiadians.
Definitely the Pleiadians or Plebeians.
Pleiadians.
Or Pleiadians or however you say it.
The Paladins.
Or Pleiadians.
Pleiadians. No, but I mean, you know, I also want to be rational and say, weather balloons makes a lot of sense. Yes, it doesn't really explain, you know, why an hour before the radar caught something, but like, so maybe the Japanese did send a recon thing and that like freaked us out a little bit and they were just like reconning to see how close they could get before they
did,
you know,
something and
were
just
seen or anything. I don't know.
They might have actually been, and you know, if it was a Japanese aircraft, say launched from a submarine, they might have just been exploring our radar defenses.
Yeah, like that's exactly what I mean.
So they launch a plane, they fly until they detect radar emissions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, we've been picked up. They turn around and go back.
Turn around and go back and then sink down.
So it could have been, or it could have been just a random occurrence, too.
Yeah,
it could have been even one of our planes.
And there is some evidence that adds validity to that, because when the object, remember I said it was off the coast? And then it came inland, and then it disappeared as it hit the foothills outside of just inland from the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it disappeared. So it could have been, like you're saying, it may have been a plane. Oh, we've been caught, duck down below where we should be visible and turn around and head home.
Yeah.
That is completely possible.
You know, so I guess I'm torn between knowing that aliens exist and this was probably their first attempt at contact.
Which we screwed up.
We were the worst
house guests ever.
And now they're arming for bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Man, these human beings are dicks, man.
Yeah, man.
We're
going away, man.
Yeah.
That's how aliens talk. I know that as a sentient robot that they
sent.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is going a little too far. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the links about this particular episode will be on the website. As always, that website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. When you're on the website, you can listen to the episodes and you can always go ahead and leave us a comment. We've gotten a couple of those recently, which is good to have back.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ahead and find us on iTunes. If you're on iTunes, go ahead, take the time to subscribe and leave us a rating. We've been getting more of those, which
is
good.
And comments too, yeah.
Yeah, the comments and the ratings.
Awesome.
Those are starting to roll in, which is fun times. Now, if you know that an episode should have come out, but you haven't had a chance to go to iTunes and you're out and about, you can just use Stitcher to stream the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
From any mobile device, whatever it may be. And last but not least, we are, of course, on Facebook, so go ahead and find us, friend us. We've got the group. If you want to join the group and chat with folks, please have at it. And of course, last but not least, you can always you can send us an email. That email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. So if you've got ideas of things you'd like us to look into or just general comments, stuff like that, feel free to send them.
Yeah, maybe somebody that you know has disappeared, like, you know, been abducted by UFOs and you want us to find them.
We can be ufologists.
If you're from a Pleiadian beam ship, please write us an email.
Oh, yeah.
But we actually do have an email that we were going to read this week. And Joe,
one or two. We the mailbag is always is over brimming with letters. So we'll just randomly pick a few out to read. So this guy is from a guy named Joe Blank. I'm not going to give you his last name. Hey, Thinking Sideways. Love your show. I work in a big windowless warehouse all alone and spend nearly all of my time listening to podcasts and audiobooks on a variety of subjects. But I have always had a love of the mysterious and creepy events in history, which we're all about.
Yep.
In high school on the East Coast, I was a big Art Bell fan. Oh, Art Bell and us. Hey.
Well, yeah, yeah, we just talked about him last week.
Yeah.
I know. And had a tape recorder set to a timer so I could record shows while I slept as he was not on until 1 a.m. EST. I wish there was a podcast in the same vein. And then I found Thinking Sideways a little before Christmas and binge listened to every episode. The show is clever, and I appreciate how careful you are to articulate all explanations equally. I recommended the show to my friend who listens to the podcast other than WTF, and now he listens to. Nice work. So thanks a lot, Joe. We appreciate that you appreciate us, and keep those cards and letters rolling in. And
we like that
too.
You like us.
And yeah. I really hope that we make life in that it's a windowless warehouse, I believe.
Yeah,
a little better. Because I've worked in a cube village before, which was in the center of a giant building. And so I could see, 80, 90 yards away was a window with sunlight. So I can kind of relate.
Yeah.
Which is still fun. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
I hope things are going okay.
So we have another piece of listener mail that I wanted to read.
Oh, yeah.
More fan mail for Devin.
Yeah, some fan mail for Devin. Actually, it's since we already talked about my mom tonight, we're going to talk about my dad. It's from him. I didn't know he was listening to the show, but apparently he is. and he just sent us an email, and it just says, see, and this link, and it's a link to Wine Spectator that is about how well champagne ages in reference to the Baltic Sea anomaly.
Oh, yeah. We were wondering about why they were going after the old champagne.
Yeah, because we were like, it was probably gross. Apparently, it ages totally fine. Thanks, Dad.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't think it was like a UFO. But
yeah. Well, thanks, Devin's dad. Now I know.
Yeah, now we know. There was actually a legitimate reason for them to be going after that champagne.
Oh, hell yeah.
I really love the way your dad told you he's listening to the show.
That's great. Yeah.
Quite awesome.
Hope you're enjoying the show, Devin's dad.
All right, gang. Well, that's all we've got for this week. So we will be chatting with you next week. Have a good one.
Next time, we're going to solve another one. See you then.
Ufologists.